Hello, I'm Dan.
I'm Simon.
And this is the Wikicast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Simon, what are we talking about this week?
This week, Daniel, we're talking about the Yonalosis salamander.
Brilliant.
I know, I couldn't have asked for a better article.
Just what I always wanted.
It has everything. It is a reptile.
Right.
Its name, just its name alone, the Yonalosis salamander.
Right, where's it found?
It is found in the United States, in the Southern Appalachian Mountains. The common and specific name is of Native American origin, meaning Trail of the Bear, sounds like a martial arts tournament.
Yeah.
And it's derived from the Yonalosa Road northeast of Linville, where the specimen was first described. It's the least concerned species, so it's found everywhere.
Oh, good. How big is it, as it were?
Oh, that is a very good question. Also, it's not a reptile, it's an amphibian. I'm an absolute idiot. Sorry, all the biologists who are listening, because we have so many biologists listening, I'm sure, for quality information. It's differentiated by its large size and distinctive rust-coloured dorsum. Much like my friend Hugo.
Yes, I do like, if I was to have a dorsum, I'd prefer it to be rust-coloured, I think.
Well, I think don't we all have a dorsum? So the dorsum is the, like in a shark, the dorsal fin is the famous one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I feel like, isn't the dorsum just your back? It's like the fancy Latin word for back, in the same way that like fish have pectoral fins, which are basically their tit fins.
Yeah.
Because pectorals are your chest muscles. But I think dorsal's your back.
I'm getting it's the upper side of an animal or the back in humans and similarly erect organisms.
What about if they're floppy?
I don't know. I mean, you're in a world of trouble then. Okay, in the Appalachian Mountains, you say?
Yeah, is a place. So that's the northeast of America, I believe. It was one of these one of the early areas colonized by Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
And I know basically nothing about it other than it is gives its name to an amazing suite of music by Aaron Copland.
Oh, really?
Which, I was amazed, because I introduced the chapel choir chat to it, and nobody heard of it.
Mm.
Like, someone was like, is this Lord of the Dance?
Yeah.
No!
I'm not going to lie,
it's a ballet. There's a ballet that Aaron Copland wrote called Appalachian Spring, which is about 25 minutes long. So I think it's similar to, in length, like Rodeo, which everyone knows, like the hoedown from.
Mm.
That's the dum da da dum da 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 dum da da dum dum dum. Sounds quite a podcast, actually. and it's this amazing suite in, I think it's 7 or 8 parts, and the penultimate movement is the same tune as Lord of the Dance, which is a much older Quaker song.
Okay.
And it's really good. I really like Copland. It's weird in that like a lot of my likes in music, classical music, are like Handel, Palestrina, Bach, and then Copland, because I feel like Handel and Bach typify like the Baroque style, whereas Copland is just so American.
Yeah,
it's like the early form John Williams in a way.
Yeah, it was like my discovery of Billings.
Bill Billings.
Yeah, or Billy Billings.
You've already heard of, dear readers, because that's what, of course, you now are, despite the fact that none of you read this podcast.
According to Wikipedia, the Appalachian Mountains once reach elevations similar to those of the Alps and the Rockies.
Oh, wow.
They shot down quite a bit after they lost their erosion. Dorsal. Yeah, exactly. It's very pretty, though. I'm just looking at some pictures. I must admit, when I did a American history module at school, which was one of my favorite classes, actually. I think it's the history of the US is really interesting. But I definitely remember like what that you were talking about with as far as kind of early colonizations goes.
It's not a part of history that I know terribly well, despite the fact isn't it strange actually that like for British people, one of the most significant things we ever did, sort of the modern history of the world, was colonize America.
Mm.
And yet, as a nation, we know very, very little about it. We know about what went wrong.
It's also one of the later colonizations. So as far as it being documented, you would have thought that there would have been far more. But I think purely due to the events that happened, it's certainly not a priority for it to be taught in the British education system, for sure. You know, I mean, as someone who spent a considerable amount of his youth in Australia, the importance of learning Australian history is colossal, and it almost becomes slightly laughable because you focus on, I'd say, maybe 3 years of your kind of primary historical education through, I'm going to say, years 5 to year 8. A tremendous amount of that is taught about, or focused on rather, the history of Australia. it doesn't really have enough history to span 3 years worth of school. It's so, you know, it's so relatively short when you think about, you know, when I remember being at school in either the Netherlands or the UK, both of which had a British curriculum. We'd be doing a different month, would be, you know, like Edwardian, Tudor, Viking, Egyptian, ancient Greek, you know, like they give you like a really nice spread, where we didn't really get much of that.
Well, it was interesting. There was a study done recently where they think that Aboriginal people might have arrived in Australia much earlier than they thought. I think it might have been like 60,000 years ago or something. Which the way it was put into context for me was that if you imagine all of Aboriginal history as a clock, then white people arrived something like 3 minutes to midnight. And, you know, that's when we think about there's not much history. Of course, there is. It's just not written down as we think of history.
And that's the other thing, too. As far as we're taught about the kind of atrocities that were committed to the Aboriginal population by kind of white settlers. But as far as actual kind of Aboriginal history, there wasn't a tremendous amount. There was certainly times where we'd have to go away and go out into the bush. And we'd meet kind of like an elder, and he'd tell us, he'd talk to us about like dream time, and you know, we'd be going like coastal walks, and he'd be pointing out like how he kind of navigates and what you can and can't eat. There was one where we basically went through kind of like a bush tucker course, and he would be saying like, yeah, this is what we normally do, and that was fascinating. But as far as actual history goes, it wasn't a kind of a tremendous focus, which was always disappointing because that was my favorite part. You can only get so kind of bored when it's just you hear the same thing year in, year out about, you know, like we came over from the British, we didn't really like the British, and then the British came over with us a little bit more, and then we told them to go away, and then they went away, and now here we are.
Yeah.
Like, basically condense that into a single couple of sentences, that's the extent of what we learned. And obviously there's so much more, but to be honest, the history of kind of like the building of towns and things wasn't particularly interesting, because I think it's far more interesting to look back at when it's happening at an earlier stage when you don't have the technology, you know. Like, so that's precisely why the kind of settlement of America I thought was so interesting. Also, it wasn't just the British, you know, you had the rivals with the Spanish and the Dutch and the French.
The French in the South, yeah. I mean, it definitely felt like, when I went to Florida, that was the impression I got, was that, like, it was a place that was colonized. Basically a place that was colonized after more technology had been developed. And it felt kind of like it shouldn't be there. It was very strange. I only got this in Florida because I went there for space camp. I won this competition. I went to NASA in Florida and Texas and sort of had 2 weeks there. And when we were in Florida, it felt like we were intruding on nature. It was really strange. I've never felt that anywhere else, possibly because Europe is just so old. Although, do you reckon that people from like sub-Saharan communities in Africa who have been there for even longer, do they come to Europe and think, well, this seems a bit new?
I guess they must do. I mean, I suppose it's so different that maybe it's not seen as new.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you would take if you took them to like a modern, a new kind of residential complex, then I would imagine they'd say so. But if you took them to Hadrian's Wall,
yeah,
or Stonehenge, or you know, something like that, they'd probably be like, oh, okay, it's just,
they're not going to be different. This is a new build.
Yeah.
Bloody new people coming in. They're not even obeying the regulations.
Yeah. Grant, it's like a really weird episode of Grand Designs. Like, can you imagine what Kevin MacLeod would be saying upon like the people who were originally building Stonehenge? This husband and wife have decided to build a stone monolith on an area of swampland, and she's wanted to play project manager.
Like, their budget is 12,000 denarii.
Yeah. Like,
Claudius is doubtful.
Yeah.
Well, it's subcontractors, you see.
Yeah. They'd be walking through Stonehenge being like, well, I mean, if you're into this kind of thing, I suppose it's going to be nice, and with some time when it weathers, it'll be all right. Like, you know, how he never truly kind of compliments a design. He just walks around and sasses people off a bit, which is why I think I both enjoy him and hate him at the same time, because there are times when I'm like, you're just being rude now. This is just cruel.
It's like, I can just imagine him, like, sort of looking to Stone Age camera. And of course, they're over budget.
Yeah, yeah.
And then walking off. The windows haven't been installed. And then it's just like the what are they called? The individual, like, large stones that form, like, an arch kind of thing.
I don't know.
It's like, oh, I love it that was an incomplete design. That was a Grand Designs episode that just went over budget. And yeah. They didn't have the budget to put the windows or the central heating in. There was meant to be a pool in the middle. And they just never got round to it.
I know that the heel stone, friar's heel, or sunstone are the most important ones, but they were the ones that were found.
Do you
in
know
the
that,
center.
Or did you just Wikipedia?
To be
that?
Fair, I did know that. I just couldn't quite recall the name. I thought it was something to do with sun, because of, you know, that was the point.
Yeah, it's
of
a calendar.
The,
yeah. Although there was there's these big, because it's relatively close to where I live.
Mm.
There you get on the local news all the druids and people that turn up for the solstice. And things like that.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I read something recently. I know it was a Vox video about how they think it might have been the equinox instead. And instead of basically the idea is that the sun... For those of you that don't know what Stonehenge is, by the way, somehow, it's basically sort of concentric rings of stones that were once more complete. And on the day of the summer solstice, so the longest day of the year, if you stand in the dead middle and you look between... sort of down a line of stones, then in between two massive ones with a capstone, the sun will rise.
Mm.
But I think there's this theory that actually you're meant to be looking the other way on the equinox sunset, I think.
Yeah.
Or it might be the winter solstice sunset. I'm not very good with the solar calendar.
I think it's winter. It's super interesting, though, because it's still very much up for debate as to how these stones got there. Because
they don't come from anywhere nearby. They're from Wales,
yeah.
I think.
And to transport of that sheer size.
Yeah, it's tens of tons.
Mental.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many kind of...
because I don't know off the top of my head, can you Google when it was made or believed to be created? Because also, I suppose it was in stages. It wasn't all at once.
Stonehenge 1, circa 3100 BC.
So it's about the same time as the pyramids, I think.
That was around 3000, wasn't it?
Something like that.
So they've got...
We got shit all over by the Egyptians.
It breaks...
The builders of Stonehenge went to Egypt and were like, oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. They've got this perfectly, geometrically perfect pyramid.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of like, oh, we've got a ring of stones.
It's like, oh, they thought to put them on top of one another, grunk.
Yeah.
Why didn't we think of that? They haven't got gaps in it. But like, what's in the middle? A king. No!
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Stop it.
They are cool, though. And it's not... And, you know, there's henges all over the UK.
Yeah, it's not like the biggest. Avebury is the biggest, I think. And I've been there. I rolled down the ditch there once when I was a kid.
No, fair.
I wasn't just particularly clumsy.
I used to work up in North Yorkshire, which is where my father's side of the family's from, the Moore clan. I used to work at a place called Swinton Park, and on their grounds, it was kind of like a hotel come country club now come stately home.
Right.
It's the residence of Lord and Lady Massam. And as we'd walk there, a lot of the times for like jobs, whether if we were entertaining in certain areas of the estate, I'd have to go away and work at different places. One of the places was called Druids something. That's going to really bother me. I can't remember the last bit of the name.
Coccyx. Druid's Coccyx.
I think it might be Druid's Temple.
Right.
Or something like that. But it was basically, you go there and it almost looks like a Stonehenge in miniature, and it's all in this kind of huge, kind of like almost like a valley in miniature. You go down, it's really interesting, and it's all kind of like candle lit and this brazier's burning and stuff. And this thing has been around for a very long time, but it was built as a folly.
Right, yes.
And they're really cool because you've got like a kind of like a sacrificial altar at the top, and because it was built so long ago.
Several quotation marks, yeah. The sacrificial altar.
I mean, it all looks, if you didn't know it was built as a folly, it all looks completely legit because it's aged so well.
It now has aged. I suppose at the time when it was all clean cut, it must have been like, Georgians using their imaginations.
Yeah, it's very, very cool though. And the number of times that you see, you go to kind of older kind of manor houses or stately homes, or estates most commonly, because you need the size, and you were usually built near rivers. But the number of just weird and wonderful follies that you get built, which is basically just kind of wealthy landowners having too much money to know what to do with, so they just build something
for fun.
You're
literally throwing your money in a pit.
Yeah, like I remember we visited one, and there was just like a castle in miniature. It may have even been Blenheim Palace.
I don't think there's a castle, 'cause I've been to Blenheim Palace.
Yeah, no, same. It's near where I live. It's somewhere on the estate, or it might be, I can't remember. It's somewhere, I think it's in Oxfordshire or something like that. But yeah, it's hilarious. You're walking around and be like, oh, what's that? It looks ancient. Like, no, it's actually really recent.
One of my favourite words is grotto.
Mm.
Like, it's a very English pronunciation there. But yeah, because around where I'm from, around Bath, because this was definitely the style around the kind of Georgian and early Victorian times.
Yeah.
And that was when Bath was in its like heyday. So there are loads of these homes with them around nearby. There was the one that was used in Barry Lyndon, and I can't remember its name. I remember I used to go there because my mum would sing at like gigs, which would be like these big concerts with like festivals and stuff. And then Dad and I would
explaining to me the concept of a gig.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean like a punk gig. It was like an opera gig.
Oh, right, okay.
but it would be part of a festival. It wasn't just like an opera company that got a huge audience. Just a little thing. And walking around with Dad, and he'd have like these ancient Greek-looking temples, because I guess that was the period when it was like neoclassicism, wasn't it? It was like people getting really interested in.
Yeah.
It was almost like a re-Renaissance.
Yeah.
Or it just took that long to get to England.
Yeah, spurred on by the Grand Tour.
Time. And so, you know, you had these rich people building stuff, including one of my favorite names, the guy who built, for example, Prior Park, which is just outside Bath, and I used to live right next to. It was called Capability Brown.
Wow, what a great name.
Yeah.
It's almost like Caractacus Potts.
Yeah. I think it was one of these like monikers that he kind of took on. It wasn't his actual name, but he's known as Capability Brown.
Yeah.
It's amazing, and he was a landscaper. I also like this idea that it was a very imperial thing to do, to be like, yeah, we don't like that hill, we'll get rid of that, and we'll put in, it's almost like in SimCity or something, when you're sculpting the landscape, and you're like, we'll put an industrial zone there, my lord, we'll put the hospital over there, with all the radial roads to make sure that, you know, it gets out to all the people, yes, good.
Sewage disposal downriver, so it doesn't flow through.
Capability, live up to your name. What did we do about the crime? Oh, the endemic crime, my lord.
It was like, no, who was it who... I was in... the other day, I went into... there's a really fantastic vintage like clothes shop in Exeter down the road, which I every now and then stick my head into. And I literally stuck my head into... I found a hat that I quite took a fancy to. And on one of the recent Hat Films vlogs, you know when Trot finds that particular hat that he says makes him look like a kind of a servant.
That other servant hat.
I found one of those as well, and I kept looking into the mirror, being like, more ale, my lord. You know, like, I couldn't resist it. And then I remember I was getting a little bit too loud because the lady at the counter kind of just came around and was like, are you right there, my love? Trying to make it, just pulling it off my head, putting it away, kind of shuffling out the door. Like, it's amazing.
Is this the shop that is the favourite haunt of our friend Ed?
Oh yeah, this is where Ed recently bought a pair of cowboy boots. I think it's also where he bought his wedding dress.
Ed has no money, but many things. And I have a suspicion that those two things are correlated.
Yeah. Correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation, but in this case,
it really does. He'll, like, the number of times, I have no money, and be like, right, I'm going to buy 24 pairs of sunglasses.
He was wanting to buy the choir matching sets of sunglasses from Poundland, which would have been about 25 quid.
Yeah, but, well, presumably 24. It was 24 of us.
Was it? I thought, including Michael.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was like, that's 1-0 to you.
1-0. Give
you
bastard. because we, for those of you who listened in last week, we had graduation.
So we went to our official cathedral of the podcast, Truro Cathedral.
We'd like to thank you so much, Truro Cathedral, for sponsoring this episode of the podcast.
This episode brought to you by God.
Yeah. For the final service that we did, not only at Truro, but because Truro's at the end of the week, it was the final one to wrap up the entire time we had.
The entire time in chapel choir, because it was my very last
service.
Oh, yeah,
for you, yeah.
Yeah.
We were singing Bohemian Rhapsody, and as the final one, we thought it'd be quite funny to, after singing... I think Parry's I Was Glad, wasn't it?
Yeah,
which is a monster of a sing.
I've never sung louder in my life, I don't think. I could see the hairs on the girl in front of me when I finished a particular note, or started a particular note. You just see them go, whew.
Yeah. Oh, it was crazy. And it's a big sing. The beginning of I Was Glad is split tenor.
As in there are two tenor parts, rather than... Every episode, there's something technical that goes wrong.
I knocked a wine glass. That's my...
No, that was his laptop, Dan's electronic incapability corner. Incapability more.
I can't stop myself getting emails.
You could stop yourself from touching the PS4 controller or, like, turning your phone on silent.
That's true, yeah.
Or putting your laptop on silent. Don't wiggle your way out of this.
Sorry, I should let you use your laptop from now on, shall I?
Oh. Mine's running code in the office.
Okay.
I'm a busy boy.
Okay.
I'm on my phone. This is our first mobile episode, just so you know.
Oh, our first.
It's my first mobile episode, you Anyway, yes, what Dan means by split tenor is that instead of having just
I mean
soprano,
the tenors are split.
Yeah. Instead of just having soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, there are two tenor parts.
Yeah. And the first tenor line goes very, very high, and then we follow that up with Bohemian Rhapsody, which is mental. So it was a huge thing, and we finished it by the end of it, and it was just crazy. Yeah. Anyway, after finishing that, we thought it'd be quite funny to whip out sunglasses and sing Bohemian Rhapsody, which... Those of us who were singing the melody, i.e. first tenors plus Ed, we did. And it was hilarious.
What else did you do during that particular performance? You weren't wearing any trousers, Dan.
Oh, yeah. No, that was another thing.
We did
trouserless Truro, which was quite fun, where under our cassocks, all the guys and some of the girls, fair play.
I think most of the girls, actually.
Yeah. Didn't wear any trousers, which was
so if you don't know what cassocks are like, imagine Star Trek uniforms. They're like that kind of thing. They're like an all-body kind of thing, but they're like robes. If you don't have them done up at the front, because they do up slightly to the side, but if you don't do them up, you look like an aura from Harry Potter.
Mm.
They're kind of like wizard robes, and they're completely opaque. You don't know what's underneath.
Yeah, and you typically wear... another kind of white flowing garment over the top called a surplus.
Mm. This case, it was surplus to requirements.
Mm-hmm, exactly. But because it wasn't a service, we were just wearing the cassocks and our Jesus collars.
Yeah, I don't know what they're actually called.
I guess a cravat, I suppose. Yeah. I mean,
it's a white thing you tie around your neck and it fills the gap at the front of the cassock. But we call them Jesus collars.
Yeah, because it's easy. I mean, they're actually really, they're ideal. If you look at a choir like King's College Cambridge, for instance, they don't wear them except for the... choristers who wear ruffs and ruffs.
Oh, do they just wear cassocks?
They wear cassocks with white shirt and then the king's tie.
Ah.
But because we either some of us will, there'll be a day where one of us will forget to wear a white shirt, or just for uniformity's sake, we can just stick a collar on and hide.
If in doubt, assume people are morons.
Mm.
That has been, I found, a very, very good rule in life.
Yeah. It was such a good week. It was really, really fun. Very, very busy, very tiring, but
We did eight. Well, you did 19 performances.
Yeah.
In the space of 8 days.
It was good, and it's all as choral scholars. It's all paid for, which is really, really great. Not only do we, you know, the bus down to Truro is all sorted for us and our accommodation, but also like per service, there's a fee, and it's quite nice. It's
not something we do for the money.
No,
nice to be paid, but yeah, it's not a huge amount.
It's certainly not something we do for the money when we know people personally who are graduating.
Oh, yeah.
You know, without that connection, I think it's hard to kind of separate the fact that there's kind of like a nice kind of fee at the end, which is worth it because it's a heck of a lot of work, especially considering we learned Bohemian Rhapsody in about a week and it's not a simple piece.
I think for me the biggest payoff is always when you're on stage and there'll be someone missing from the choir because they're graduating, and you'll just hear like, "Welcome to the stage, University of Exeter Chapel Choir," and you hear like a kind of polite applause, and then you hear someone at the back go, "Woo, yeah!"
But it was really great. We've consistently had at least one or two people who got so into Bohemian Rhapsody that one guy.
Give a standing
stood
ovation.
Up and, like,
one man standing
shook
ovation.
Michael's hand and was like absolutely blown away, and it's done wonders for our the publicity.
If you'd like to hear it, you can watch the video we did, which we did talk about already, didn't we?
Yeah.
And there is another one coming of nearly said the alternative title.
Yeah.
You Are the New Day.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to the alternative title, it's like You Are the New Day brackets You Are the Nude Gay.
Yeah. It's an awesome piece, and this is the first time that we've done another arrangement which is written for double choir. So normally we just do
SATTBB.
Whereas this one is SATTBB, but also then there's a whole other choir does this kind of backing kind of sound. It's really, really nice. I'm actually really interested to see how that video comes out because I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah. I have so many things to edit. Well, this actually brings us neatly on to what we did last night because I'll leave that till last because in my to edit part at the moment, I have a music video for Mima, which was done about a month ago, but she's not fast because she's Mima. I have a whole week of the vlog. I have 80,000 subscribers Q&A. I have 3 episodes of Crash Course Cryosphere. I have...
Our trip to Malta last year.
Yeah, which I will do. I will do. I have... There's another one that I still need to do. Oh, God, I'm having a complete blank.
Last night's one?
Yeah, and then, yeah, there's also last night's one, where Dan and I got made up by our friend Lily.
Yeah, which was so much fun.
And in a way, I felt like this will be going out way after this podcast does. But I feel like we tried to put a serious purpose to it, in that, yeah, it is a little bit of a clickbaity title. It's going to be us getting our makeup done by Lily. Yeah. It's just a fun video.
I don't think that's clickbaity at all.
No, I hope not.
Yeah.
But
well, it's literally describing what the video is.
Yeah. So. But as in, it's more sensationalist than I normally do. Like, it's more lowest common denominator, if that makes sense.
And that it's not got anything to do with science.
Well, not just that, but also, like, it's an inherently, like, oh, this is what you people want to see kind of thing.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's a bit pessimistic.
Well, I guess I worry about this as a YouTuber. I worry about doing content.
What do you do?
Sorry. I worry.
No, I don't think you do, do you?
I don't worry.
Yes, you do.
I worry.
No, you don't.
Back me up on this, guys. Right, Dan.
No one else
convinced.
Says worry.
It's worrying.
It's not.
It's not worrying.
It's worrying.
Oh, not you.
I'm feeling worried.
I'm not feeling worried.
Do you see how ridiculous I sound?
No.
Worried.
That sounds perfectly normal. I'm worried.
That's crazy.
Anyway, I'm worried.
Write into us on a postcard about...
I'm sorry, should I spell that with like a Y in it? I'm worried that...
No, just spell it as it normally is. There's no need to change the spelling. Just pronounce it properly.
Old English with Simon.
Oh, God. Crazy. Depending I suppose you are West Country, so you're a little bit backwards anyway.
I am worried.
Yeah. See, if you were truly West Country, you'd be saying worried. So I don't know where you get worried from.
I reckon it might be my mum. Interestingly, Liv is convinced that mum has a really thick West Country accent. Do you hear it?
No, not at all.
I don't think so.
No.
To me, she sounds very posh.
Yeah, I think she sounds just...
She sounds normal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I be worried about, as a YouTuber, that I do content that is crowd-pleasing and doesn't have necessarily an inherent worth of its own. Yeah. You know, and like, because whenever I make something, I want there to be a point. I want it to be either like you're communicating science, I'm educating people about what it's like to do a PhD, answering people's questions about that. I'm telling people about good books. You know, there is a definite point rather than, haha, let's just do a prank and make people laugh.
Yeah.
Like certain YouTubers. Sorry. It's a silence. It's a purely audio medium, but you can feel the shade. Like, yeah, I like the idea of my content standing up on its own, and I worry that...
Thank you.
That video comes across as a little bit too... Yeah, populist. It's like, it's just, you know...
I think the
stuff.
Only reason it's appearing as populist is because it's not... It's vastly different to all the other content you do on that channel.
Yeah.
But I still think it has a tremendous amount of worth.
Well,
and
we made it have a tremendous amount of worth because it isn't just us getting a mocap done, because we wanted to convey the point about gender roles in society with it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm not overly worried about it.
Yeah. Oh, this is... What was that word that you said the previous time that really...
Jangle. Oh, yeah, poll.
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 Poll, yeah. It's not hard.
That's this...
Anyway, no, the point that was wanting to be conveyed was very easily conveyed, because all you need to do is talk about... The first question we asked Lily was, why do you wear it? And what do you see? And to be fair to Lily, she did a tremendous job, because it's...
Better with you than with me. Dan comes out better. Than
not me. Only the not only in the makeup, but in her conversation, she's just finished a degree in, sociology?
Yeah.
Which she absolutely smashed. And she wrote her dissertation on... I can't specifically remember, but it had a lot to do with gender roles and women in... I think she used a lot of stuff about the drag industry, I suppose.
The drag race.
She's super knowledgeable about it. And
sorry if I just completely interrupted you, by the way. I just moved my microphone. I think that was really loud.
No, fair.
Sorry.
No, that's right. Yeah, and I honestly, not only the kind of the process of being made up, but also Lily's kind of conversation through it. And I found it really, really interesting.
I hope it conveyed a point.
I would be very surprised if it didn't. I think it's very,
but
very hard.
But you have
to
remember, people are morons, and I feel like people are going to miss the point of it.
Oh, you're sounding very, very like...
CGP Grey?
No. Who directed Transformers?
Michael Bay.
Yeah, that's a Michael Bay attitude. You need to come at it with a Nolan perspective.
People need to talk about that.
Oh yeah. We do need to talk about that.
But just to conclude this point, like in my experience on the internet, if you don't make something completely crystal clear, you will get people that miss the point spectacularly. Mm. And I think it also doesn't help when you are dealing with an international audience, because we will put messages across kind of just assuming that people think like us and have the cultural knowledge that we do, mm. and you'll make references to things that might be lost on people if they are not from, like, particularly a Western culture.
Yeah.
People will, sometimes willfully, I think, but often just sort of miss the point, and you kind of have to really spell it out. And I don't like saying that, but that's just sort of been my experience with the comment section on YouTube. And that's possibly because the majority of people who watch it, because, yeah, you get 80,000, say for the sake of argument, you get 100,000 views on a video, you will get maybe 1,000 comments. Mm. And that means that there's 99% of the people that watched it probably got it and just didn't, you know, were like, oh, all right.
Yeah.
But then it's the people that don't get it that, you know, will leave a comment. It's the negative feedback. It sounds louder in your head, but also people are more likely to write it.
Yeah.
But yes, we should talk about Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk.
Oh, my giddy aunt.
Yeah, wow.
Perfection on screen. I was absolutely blown away. In fact, the day we saw it, we came home, tried to convey how we felt in words, didn't really manage it. You disappeared off to Lips, Pixel yeah. Girl's house. I stayed here, made some dinner and put the soundtrack on, just listened to that on loop. I then called my parents and told them how important it was for them to see it. And then just last night, so literally they heeded my advice, and within 2 days had gone as a family to go and see it. And it's just a masterpiece, a visual masterpiece. The editing and the sound is fantastic. As an exercise in visual storytelling, mm. it's unbelievable. It really shook me up, I think.
Well, I mean, we went in with very different expectations. I think I was being, as in this podcast, I was being quite pessimistic.
Mm.
Because, basically, I really like Christopher Nolan's early stuff. The Prestige is a great film. Mm. Obviously, The Dark Knight is great. And I think Batman Begins is underrated.
Mm.
But I thought The Dark Knight Rises was overblown. And then it got to Interstellar, and I didn't think it was very good. And I was like, oh, Nolan, you might have jumped the shark a little bit.
Mm.
And then, so I was kind of going into this being like, I want this to be good.
Yeah.
But I deliberately didn't watch, like, the later trailers. I think I watched the teaser. I hadn't listened to any of the soundtrack. And I was just like, right, come on, impress me, please.
Mm.
And my God, did it.
Yeah.
I think the thing that disarmed me the most was the lack of three-act structure. The fact that it basically was just a continual escalation. Mm. It was a bit like, there's a really experimental film called Wavelength, which is just about a screen that compresses
mm.
and you zoom in on one object for the entire hour and a half runtime.
Mm.
And it felt a bit like that. There was just this tension, as brilliantly built up by Hans Zimmer in the soundtrack, that just ratchets up and up and up and up and up. And then just at the denouement, you feel completely drained after, because the climax just, it's like such a release of tension,
mm.
and it is in the soundtrack in a particular swell, which is Nimrod, mm. as we've talked about as well. The fact that Hans Zimmer uses, that's the only discernible tune. Oh, you know, you discerned a bit of The Last Post in it,
mm-hmm.
You know, using again a British cultural thing to convey right at that moment of maximum tension. That release was. If you listen to the soundtrack on its own, you won't get it.
No.
And I've had this since, actually, listening to the soundtrack and to the bit of the final sequence of Tom Hardy's character, not to give any spoilers. And it just doesn't have anywhere near the same effect.
No, it's still a masterpiece of sound.
I don't know if it is on its own. I think it only works in relation to the film, actually. I think as a piece of music on its own, would I go to a concert and hear that? I don't think I'd be impressed if I heard it on.
I think I would, because I can't separate it from what I can see in my mind's eye.
But within the bounds of its own universe, I feel like the soundtrack isn't.
I think the only way for to be able to comment on that, though, would have been us listening to the soundtrack before we'd seen the film.
Yeah.
Like,
but that was one of the reasons why I didn't see it, or listen to the soundtrack, mm. because I knew that if I listened to it, and I was like, oh, this sounds like just boring Hans Zimmer stuff. Like it completely works with the film, and it is very much a film soundtrack that adds to what you see on the screen,
mm.
and the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Yeah,
and yeah, I feel like on its own, it's relatively drab.
Well,
maybe I'm not listening to it in the right way.
I think it's really good. I mean, it certainly works well. Certainly works better, rather. with its kind of visual companion, because that's why it was written.
Yeah.
So you can't really fairly separate the two. I still think, though, when I came home and was listening to the soundtrack, really enjoyed it. And in fact, it was I enjoyed it because I was very conscious of the fact that when I was watching the film, I knew that the score had been really highly praised, and I didn't want to focus on it too much for it to then detract from what I'm seeing on the screen. But equally, I wanted to listen to it enough that I could try and pick out little kind of clever things that he'd done. So being able to listen to it kind of in isolation and really focus on what he's actually doing with the music, I had more of an appreciation for it.
Learning that he'd recorded Christopher Nolan's Pocket Watch.
Yeah,
as the constant ratcheting up of the tension, because you hear this from the very beginning.
Yeah,
you hear
this ticking. It sounds like a pipe bomb.
And it's Christopher Nolan's Pocket Watch. That I don't know if he just was like, I'll leave it overnight with a microphone.
Yeah.
We'll just get like 12 hours of it.
Yeah, I have no idea. But very cool.
Yeah. And just like cinematically,
yeah.
I feel like we know a lot about films, contrary to what some people on in the YouTube comment section thought. We do know quite a bit about films.
You know nothing about films. Oh, hang on, I watched the video. Yeah, you do know something about films. Yeah, thanks.
we do know quite a bit about films, and we're relatively articulate about it, but I am really struggling to communicate how I feel about this film and that's just how good it is.
A testament to the film in that I think some things that the only way that you can explain to a friend or a member of family how good it is they've got to see it, because so much of why the film is so good is the way it makes you feel and how it just stretches and warps your emotions throughout the ride. You know, like the whole watching the film is like going on a roller coaster ride, and you're just going up and up and up, and when you just think that you're about to kind of come over the precipice, you turn around a corner and you're going up and up and up again, and then
there's
it just
a Stuka Steyer vomit.
Yeah, like it was a fantastic piece of work.
The one thing which I have heard in criticism and I've yet to rebut fully in my head is whether it needed to be told in a non-linear way. And I think it adds to it by being told in a non-linear way.
Mm.
And I was right with my guess of what the numbers meant.
Mm.
Because I looked that up afterwards. And in a way, it's quite an experimental approach.
Yeah.
Because people online, interestingly, on like Rotten Tomatoes, the negative reviews seem to basically be people saying like, oh, it's typical Nolan just doing his non-linear storytelling. He has to shoehorn this gimmick in. And I was like, I don't think it's a gimmick.
No.
I think it effectively conveys the story. And I think, as we talked about when we left the cinema, it makes you engage with the film more. Because it treats you as an intelligent person. You are asked to unpick this.
Mm.
And I think because you were more hands-on, you've got a puzzle to play with. You're like, oh, hang on,
more
right.
Hands-on.
Very good. Yeah. Actually, so that was my favourite comment on the soundtrack on YouTube was, we Germans are very good. We give you the story, and then we also give you the person to write the music.
Mm.
It's like, that's edgy, but I like it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. There's another comment, I think, on that same video where it was saying, I don't know whether Christopher Nolan is the Hans Zimmer of film or Hans Zimmer is the Christopher Nolan of music. Like, it's... They're brilliant pairing.
Well.
Like, it's just...
Yeah. Also, it wasn't the same DP as the Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises, which was Wally Pfister.
It was considerably less close, which made me think it was different.
It was the same DP as Interstellar. Which was a Dutch name, which I can't remember. But the cinematography was, in a very non-flashy way, stunning.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, Lebesgue's work on The Revenant.
Mm.
Not like Birdman, which is very
nice.
That's
an awesome film.
Yeah. But it was cinematography that looked stunning, but without screaming out saying, look how good I look.
Yeah,
which is something I completely get that, like, Roger Deakins does.
Mm.
Sorry, for those of you who don't realise, I'm a bit of a fan of cinematography. Yeah, the every shot was really beautiful, and the penultimate shot, which I don't want to spoil it, but it is something
you'll know
on
it
fire.
When you see it. Yeah,
is one of the most beautiful finishing shots.
Yeah,
and also his character surrounding it.
Mm. It's a testament to how, if you're clever with how you use a camera, you can elicit the same response by just looking at an image than rather than having to have dialogue.
Yeah,
to like. Reinforce the point. The vast majority of the film, really, there's very little dialogue at all.
Yeah.
It's all, which is why I said it's an exercise in visual storytelling. You know, you leave feeling drained and really emotional. Like I think I properly kind of cried maybe three times. One of which, again, and it's that ending scene.
Mm.
You don't even see. You know, there's
It blindsided me, actually, the ending. I felt a lot during the film, but I didn't feel emotional right up until the end, and then suddenly the emotions came crashing over me like a wave.
Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't something I'd learned. Apparently it was the largest marine filming unit in history.
Wow. Well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Because it's this, the shots are colossal.
There were like 50 boats in some shots.
And just how they got this, the size of the cameras they were using up in the air.
Oh,
this
God.
Shot, which is why we said in our review as well, we'd love to go down to London, or rather up to London, to an IMAX screen. And watch it, because you've got to see it on the biggest screen you can find.
We were lucky in that we did see it in the biggest screen possibly in the whole Southwest, the Odeon in Exeter, which is like an old, it's like a converted old style theatre, isn't it? So the main screen is colossal, which was exactly the right place to see it. But yeah, my God, if you live in London, go and see it at the BFI, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, it's amazing. Amazing film.
Shall we take a trip to Dan's Correspondence Corner?
Yeah. Correspondence Corner. Here we are. It's a lovely little nook. It's very cosy.
If you'd like to visit Daniel's nook, you can send us an email at spongyelectric@gmail.com, because we've learned our mistakes. Alternatively, a carrier pigeon.
A carrier pigeon.
If you just whisper in its ear, "Find Simon and Dan," and then release it into the air.
Send it to the Citadel. It'll find us.
It might find us. Equally, every chance it won't.
So we have the first one after picking up from last week is from Jamie JX93, who was one of our first
Yes, I remember.
He's thanking us for reading his email. He was a little dismayed that he failed to proofread his original email, as Dan commented on regarding the lack of commas. This hopefully being rectified in the email.
Yes.
I'm like, yeah, it has. This is much better. Very proud. Note: he's an English literature graduate, while I only have an A level in English lit. Fair play. Then there is an incredibly lengthy question about. Questions about the UN, which for time purposes, as we have a lot of emails to get through, we shall read, but we shall read off air.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, it's going to be really good. I have just given it a quick scan and it's excellent, so we'll do it as soon as we've finished. Right, so our next email is from Tyler Rooker. Egg puns, it's titled. So I hear you two like puns. Right, we're going to fly through.
How
this.
Did you know?
Here we go.
I'm waiting for these to be excellent.
Well, here you go. Don't jump the gun just yet. Well, let me tell you that I'm not yoking around when I say that I'm super egg-cited to tell you my excellent and extraordinary egg puns, which will hopefully meet your pun expectations and will crack you up. Why egg puns? Exactly why I chose them is unclear, but I expect that it will be explained in the near future. I do like to experiment a lot, or maybe I'm just going through an existential crisis. Jesus Christ alive. This is amazing. I can't even begin to imagine the expression on your face as you read this. Probably exasperation mixed with exhaustion. But I'm sure you'll be happy to know I've run out of egg puns, so I shall exit now and bid you farewell. Huge fan of the pod, by the way.
Hang on, I'm going to stand
Very
up.
Very good.
That's a standing
that's
applause.
A standing ovation.
Well done.
Glorious.
That is well done.
A very short and to the point email from Jay Wright. I've got to say, guys, I absolutely love listening to you and watching you guys. You're really funny and your genuine friendship is endearing. Oh, thank you, mate.
That was meant for Rhett and Link, I think.
Oh, yeah. Damn.
I have only
2 points to make. I need more Dan in my life, so now that you're finished for summer, might I suggest pulling your finger out your ass and getting on with it? Thank you, Jay. I have got stuff planned. And then his second point, speaking of pulling fingers out of asses, I eagerly await the erotic fanfiction, Jay.
Oh.
Well, it's good to know that at least I've got Jay's vote.
Oh, man.
I am thinking of doing something come...
Don't
when the academic year starts again, so come September, because I should be having the number of things that I'm doing this year through uni is I think they're really going to be quite interesting. So if I was to do anything, it would be then, but we shall have to see if I have time. Hey guys, my name is Sebastian.
Hello, Sebastian
Quevedo.
Oh,
and I
wow.
live in
the surname's
Costa
returned.
Rica. Hey, it wasn't too bad.
I think you probably did all right.
Yeah. And I live in Costa Rica, a tiny ass country in Central America. I absolutely
has no
adore...
military. One of the I think it's the only country in the world that has no military. And also it pledged to be carbon zero by 2018, along with Norway and New Zealand.
Good guy, Costa Rica. Well done. A tiny ass country in Central America. I absolutely adore your podcast. Your constant banter is extremely funny to me. Simon, I love your channel. It actually has inspired me to peruse my love for physics. Probably
thank you.
I'm currently on my last year of IB, good man, and was wondering if you have any university tips for a prospective physics student. Also, I love Dan and his magnificent forehead. Thanks, Seb. Thanks, mate.
There's enough to go around.
Well done for struggling through the torture that is IB. It's so worth it in the end, but my God, does it kill you for 2 years.
In terms of applying for physics at uni, I think... I mean, I'm a slightly different case, I suppose, because I think Oxford is a very theoretical course. But I think good advice generally is to focus on your maths. The physics side of things is pretty easy. Certainly for me, I found the maths much more challenging. So focus on your vectors, matrices, calculus, and if you haven't done imaginary numbers, it'd be worth looking at those. And then basically, as with any kind of science subject, the key thing is to practice, practice, practice. So the more questions you do, the more you'll understand it. That's my standard advice.
Yeah, no, that's good. We've got another one here from Elizabeth Brown.
Hello, Elizabeth Brown.
Hey, Simon and Dan, I'm a very enthusiastic reader, in inverted commas, very nice, of your podcast. It's such a bloody brilliant idea for a podcast, and you both make me properly laugh aloud, which doesn't happen very often. Big thanks for making me so happy. I also love your channel, Simon. I've been watching for a good year or so now, and it's just been awesome seeing how you and your channel have grown and developed.
I'll send you the money soon. Thank you.
Bloody well done for everything. Bloody hell, said Ron. I hope I can meet you both one day and tell you that all this to your faces. I would also, and this excites me, I would also very much like to knit Dan a jumper.
Oh, wow.
Simon can have one too if he likes.
I'm just too much work. You're so much smaller.
Yeah. It's basically knitting for like a teddy bear, so it wouldn't take long. So I have only two questions for you both. What colours jumpers would you like? And also, would you consider enabling community contributions on your videos? I'd love to be able to write captions for your videos, including the podcast, so that those of the hard hearing can enjoy them too. Excellent idea.
A very good idea.
We'll definitely enable that. And also, jumpers... Oh my God, yes. That sounds amazing. Simon, do you want a jumper?
I'd love it. I think maroon.
Oh, damn you. Maroon. I was going to go for like burgundy or something. Or like.
I got in there first. Yeah. I want the colour that the Weasleys don't want.
Okay.
I'm a 38-inch chest, if that helps.
I am a small. Just... Right.
Imagine like a prepubescent girl.
Yeah, then you're pretty close. Except you won't have to worry about the breasts. So we're fine there. Gosh, a colour. I don't know now.
Crikey, maybe, gosh.
Green. Okay, green.
Green. There you go. Extra green.
Yeah. Bleed green.
Hashtag bleed green. Hashtag that is incredibly green. Kind of you. Good grief.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, obviously, that's a lovely request.
Can we make further requests as to what the jumpers will have on them?
I think they need to have they need to be Weasley-esque, right? They should have like a big S on yours and a D on mine.
Can I have a big D on mine as well? No. Okay, just a big S on my chest, please. That is amazing. Thank you so much.
I mean, if you've got the time and you want to do that, that would be amazing, and we'll definitely wear them in videos. 100%.
You'll get your own video, I think.
Oh, for sure. And I used to, because I'm a cool, cool person, I used to be quite a keen knitter. My gran taught me, mainly because I asked my mum to teach me, and she basically turned around and said, "You're not cool anyway. I'm not teaching you how to knit." and my gran was like, "No, I'll teach you."
I love your mum.
Yeah, she's pretty great. Whereas thankfully my gran took my request seriously. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. For the IB kids out there, I don't know if it's usually a common thing for most IB schools, but
you're not cool anyway. Yeah,
to be fair, she was spot on. Each year in your first year and your second year, you'd go away on TOC camp, which is a theory of knowledge camp.
Oh wow, you really were cool.
Which was a compulsory thing for IB students to go on. And it was focused for the top part of the course. Anyway, while I was there, we were there for maybe 3 days, throughout all of the kind of lectures and activities and whatever I was doing in the evening, which usually meant me just kind of sitting with the philosophy professor and just kind of talking about stuff that he wanted to talk about, which was super interesting. I would literally be sitting there knitting a scarf. And by the end of the 3 days, I had quite a nice scarf. So I was pretty pleased. Yeah.
Gosh, this is a whole side to you I didn't know about.
Right. Now I read this one, and this is a really good point, and I haven't thought about this, so thanks for bringing it up. Just wondering, on the podcast, if you feature people's emails in the future, could you use gender neutral pronouns, they and them, for submissions and not assume gender, as some names are gender neutral and some people use their birth name on YouTube? It would help make it more accessible, as would closed captions. The automatic ones aren't very accurate. Thanks. I had never thought about that.
Haven't either. So we will try our best to do that. And as with the previous email, I think if we can get community generated, I would do it. I genuinely would. But as some of you may know, I'm a bit busy at the moment.
I mean, it makes total sense for it to be done for the community, because it also means, you know, like if we wanted to do other languages as well.
Yes.
For those captions, then we leave it to the people who are really good at it, which is you guys. PS, use he or they for me if you mention this email. Well, thank you. I will
thank you very much for that email.
Make a concerted effort to do that in the future. Matilda Smart, Attempt number two. This is also someone who, very annoyingly, we've given the wrong email. And
so
then,
sorry.
We got there now. We're going to be all right. Right, I'm going to kind of fly through these because we've got some fan fiction to read at the end.
What?
I really want to get to those. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They're awesome.
Keep listening, folks.
A couple of questions and requests. Although I'm a few years off uni, I've been looking at Exeter for an undergraduate degree in English and theatre studies combined. Would you recommend Exeter, especially for that kind of subject area? I definitely would. It's got an amazing, not only English department, which obviously I'm pretty connected with, but I've got many, many friends who study drama, and they absolutely love it. So I imagine the
theatre opportunities in Exeter, just in terms of venues.
Yeah, you've got the largest theatre in Exeter for sure is the North on Coast. Campus.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic. In fact, one of the girls in the choir, Mima, studies English and drama.
Oh, does she?
So
I didn't know that.
She's loving it. It's a great course. I would highly, highly recommend it.
All the drama people we've met have been top notch.
Question two, a weird request, but could you do an accent video segment on the podcast?
We kind of do every week anyway.
I myself laughing every time you attempt one. Sure, why not?
We will attempt to do that in the next episode.
The question three, do you watch a lot of theatre musicals? Theatre is basically my passion, and it would be really interesting to hear your opinions on it. Four, opinions on the latest series of Doctor Who?
Doctor Key, I think you mean.
If you watched it. I didn't watch it, but I'm very looking forward to the new...
Yeah.
What's her name?
Storm in a Teacup, the female doctor. I can't remember her name.
I can't remember either. But yeah. She was amazing in... Broadchurch,
filmed on Exeter's campus.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of musical theatre, Liv is a big fan of musical theatre, and so I have now become a big fan of musical theatre. What I've seen, I've really liked. My favourite show I've been to see is Matilda.
Okay.
But I'm seeing Hamilton early next year, which I'm very excited about because I love the soundtrack.
I'm going to stop now because A, this email is bloody long, and B, my laptop's literally dead. P.S.
R.I.P.
Dan, I am so disappointed you don't like cats. Seriously, just give one a hug and you'll find out they're not creatures from hell. And besides, unlike some animals, they don't deposit their excrement everywhere on innocent people to trend on. These are lies. These are all filthy lies.
Lies! Deception!
Deception! I'm sorry. Cats are... Hellspawn. I cannot tolerate them.
I'm
dogs
wholly...
are absolutely... They're pure and lovely.
What was their name?
And brilliant. That was Matilda Smart.
Matilda, I am fully with you. He's wrong. We'll convert him one day. I'll ambush you with cats. One day I'll just open your door to your room and just throw cats in and shut the door and be like, yeah, that'll work.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, that'll definitely make me laugh.
You come out and you're just covered in scratches.
See, that's exactly why I know that cats aren't nice. If you threw
a
puppy...
If I did that with a dog, it would happen.
No, if you threw a puppy into my room, it would not scratch me.
Okay, if I threw a kitten in your room, it'd be fine. If it was a fully grown dog... If I threw an Alsatian in your room, one thing I'd be very strong. But, like, you wouldn't come out well out of that either.
I don't know.
Yeah, how do you think it would go? You're just like, oh, hey there, boy.
It depends if it's a good-natured Alsatian, whereas no cats have a good nature.
Oh, plenty of cats have good nature.
Absolutely.
If you
rubbish.
Spook them, they don't.
Complete
I'm completely
rubbish.
With you, Matilda.
Claudia Nicole Mayer. Hi, Simon and Dan. Thought I could add a bit of American perspective to your question on why soccer and baseball are so big here.
Oh, excellent.
Soccer is actually a very popular youth sport in America. I think 30 to 40% of kids play it at some point. US networks also have full coverage of European leagues and have had for years. So these teams have a big American fan base. So why can't the US make a good professional league or perform on the international stage? It's largely blamed on the pay-to-play system for youth academies. Up until recently, American professional teams haven't had their own youth academies to sign players to train. So elite players rely on travel teams, which are the youth teams at independent academies. The problem is it's very expensive, and that's not even including plane and hotel costs. Apparently, she's linked some good Guardian articles on there.
Oh, that is interesting.
As for baseball, I have no clue. My best guess would be because going to a baseball game is more about getting drunk on cheap beer than actually watching the game.
Like
love
a cricket
podcast.
Match.
Claudia. Yeah. Thank you, Claudia.
Yeah, that's actually... I'm really glad that we get that kind of email. If you are a particular nationality or a particular fan of something we're talking about and we've missed something, do let us know.
Yeah,
because
my
favourite part about being online as sort of a presence is getting these perspectives from people that I wouldn't otherwise get. So do email in if you feel like we've touched a nerve with you.
Joshua Vellacott. Dear Messrs. Moore and Clark.
Ooh, I like it.
After having Simon's podcast both inspire my study and put me to sleep, your voice is narcotic. It's intended as a compliment for the last 4 years.
I don't think he means narcotic. I think he means narcoleptic.
I also don't think he means podcast. I think he means your channel because he's had it for the last 4 years.
Ah. But also, I don't think my voice is a narcotic. That means he's being like, that's not a good thing.
No.
I think he means narcoleptic.
Yeah. I have found your podcast a perfect travelling companion on for my way to and from work. Your tangents are the highlight of the show, and Dan is an excellent co-host. Oh, thank you, mate. I was surprised to learn how young he is, considering his advanced age. Huh?
I'm confused.
You were born at the age of 6.
I'm 20. Thank you for entertaining me and also affording me the rare opportunity to use the title Messers. Kindest regards, Josh from Brisbane, Australia.
Can we insist that all future emails are addressed to Messers Clark and Moore?
Yeah. Messers Moore and Clark.
Well, whichever you prefer, I think.
I think Moore and Clark's got a better ring. Moore.
No, Messers Clark and Moore. Right, well, depending on who you prefer in the podcast.
I guess I'm biased because first. I'm going for the alliteration.
Yeah.
That's my excuse.
I feel like having the M's bookending it works.
All right, so we've got one from Simon Vaes, spelled V-A-E-S.
Oh, that's very interesting, because that's very similar to someone who I went to school with.
No, really? Loving and a Question is the subtitle.
Ooh, that sounds like a novel.
Right.
Loving and a Question.
Hello, my name is Simon Vaes. Vaes is pronounced exactly like the Far Cry 3 villain, Vaes. This is why I read this earlier, so I know I pronounce it right. It's Flemish, if you're wondering.
Oh, cool. Ah, very interesting.
I really love the podcast. It's a lot of fun listening to you two chit-chat like two grandmas. Simon, I've been watching you since your Ox vlogs, and you're an absolute inspiration to me, so much so that you've actually inspired me to pursue a PhD in philosophy.
Oh, wow.
Dan, your love of tea suits and the fact that you have a big forehead makes you like a brother I've never had. Thank you, Simon.
These are the... I'm so glad we started this podcast for this kind of email. This is amazing.
Anyways, I had a fun little question. If you had to write a novel which everyone in the world would have to read, what would the story be? Don't forget the title. Keep up the good work. Greetings from a big fan, Simon. P.S. Actually thinking of starting a podcast myself. Got any advice for a newbie? How about we give podcast advice? And then in the next episode, we'll have had a week to think about what our title of the book and what the story would be. Because that's quite a big question.
That is quite a big question. Podcasting advice, I think focus on a theme.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we did with this. We had a very clear mission statement. In terms of the technology we use, we're using a slightly janky setup. But basically, audio quality does matter.
Sure.
So focus on an audio microphone. There are some great USB ones that you can just plug into your laptop. What I use is an NT1, which is something that goes into a portable recorder. But focus on your microphone quality. And I think basically the more you do, the better you get. So don't
make
worry.
Make it really
if
natural too. I think you can tell when a podcast sounds forced. It thrives when it feels really kind of natural and effortless, which is exactly what this
is.
That's
what people connect with. So don't be something you're not, because people won't be interested in that, I think. But yeah, oh wow, novel question. I think How Not to Be a Dick by Simon Clark might make a maybe on the show next week.
I'm gonna have a think, and then next week when we come to the correspondence corner, I shall give you my answer. I'll give it some thought. I want it to be a good one. And finally, before we get to fan fiction, we have one from Emily Granger.
Hello, Emily Granger.
Awesome name, because it's
like Hermione Granger's
last name.
Yes,
that is
Hermione, as I used to call her.
So cool. Hello, both. Thanks for the excellent podcasting. The Wikicast is kind of like the British version of Dear Hank and John. High praise. There we go. How
good
fantastic.
Grief. I'll take that.
But with far more choral music and far less AFC Wimbledon. No bad thing. Simon, I read The Underground Railroad a couple of months ago and loved it. Such a well-crafted, moving book. In the spirit of your question to read more, I thought I'd write to you to recommend a book called Homegoing.
Homegoing.
By Yar Jesse.
I am going on Goodreads right now. Homegoing.
Homegoing by Yar Jesse, spelt Y-A-A.
Is it all one word, Homegoing?
Yep. G-Y-A-S-I.
Yep, gotcha. Is he Nigerian? That sounds Nigerian. But that is a very... Wow, that is going to be... I've got like 80 books that I need to read. When I finish my PhD, I intend to do a lot of this. So thank you very much for the recommendation. And also for the comparison, because when we met Hank and John at VidCon, I think that was what we were... We didn't ever think we'd be described as being like them.
Yeah. No, that's very hype.
Hank and John, if you are listening, apparently we're the new you.
Yeah. Crash hot.
And we also love everything you do.
Oh my God.
Okay, thanks, bye.
So good.
Right, and now we're on to the coup de grace of our online careers.
Fan fiction.
Amazing. Hang on, let me get my feet up. Right, okay, I'm ready.
Okay. Dear Simon and Dan, first of all, I love your podcast and the vlogs you do. I'm in Ireland right now, and I know I'm supposed to be thankful for having the chance of travelling and going abroad for the holidays, but even this beautiful country with its stunning landscape can become quite boring, and listening to the Wikicast has probably saved me from going insane more than once. In your latest podcast, you were talking about the lack of fanfiction that's been written about you, and as I'm a passionate, albeit amateur, writer, I thought, what's better than a nice cup of tea while writing some kind of weird, possibly sexual smut fanfic about two guys?
I love it.
After that, one thing led to another, ending up with me sitting here, burning my mouth on a cup of freshly brewed Irish tea with my notebook, so old school, in front of me, trying to think of secrets you could be keeping that I can turn into at least semi-interesting... Semi. story, which you'll be able to read below. So here we go. Please lean back and enjoy whatever is going to follow.
Should I put some music underneath this?
For sure. I'm from Germany, and I've still got 3 years of school left, so I apologise for any mistakes regarding my grammar or spelling. Impeccable.
Wow.
You've got... Your English is superb.
Wunderbar.
Yeah, yeah. P.S. I've got to think of a better title. Maybe you have something in mind. To be honest, I think the title's excellent. The Time Traveller with the Extraordinarily Big Forehead.
All right, let me put some sultry music under this. Let's go.
Chapter 1.
There are chapters?
This is the first chapter. But I've read this already, and it's awesome.
How many chapters are in the email?
Oh, it's just this is the first. This is only one chapter. Oh,
it's like a story by correspondence. I love it.
I love this.
Can this become a regular thing?
For sure. This is really good.
It's
amazing.
Sorry, I'll bring the music back in. Right, go.
It started to rain as he was walking down the streets of Exeter. Looking at his phone while raindrops landed on its screen, Simon noticed that he'd been working on his PhD for much longer than he'd anticipated, which was something that he was hoped was happening a lot lately, mainly because he didn't really have anything else to do besides sitting around, playing video games, watching movies or series, and occasionally going for a run. Sure, he had a girlfriend, but she was away for work over Christmas and New Year's Eve, so he'd have to spend the holidays alone as well. Usually he loved putting up Christmas decorations and buying presents for his loved ones, but especially the latter was quite hard this year, because there was simply no one who would appreciate his efforts.
Aww.
He reached his apartment, searched for his keys, and stepped into the empty flat. Technically it was big enough for two people, but since his last flatmate had moved out after he'd graduated, he'd lived alone. Usually he didn't really have a problem with that, but recently he'd been feeling lonely a lot. When he went into the living room, he saw his sports gear and suddenly felt the need to go for a run. He put the shirt, pants and shoes on, grabbed his keys and his phone and left the apartment. It was October, so it had already gotten quite dark outside. All right, my only complaint there is the use of gotten. That's an Americanism.
Oh, okay. Well, it was all sounding great. I'd never guessed that you were German. My goodness, this is amazing.
The weather was perfect for a run, he thought. It wasn't too cold and he really didn't mind the light rain. He looked at the landscape beside him, impressed by the beauty of the trees, small rivers and the light of the buildings of Exeter in the background. He was so caught up in his thoughts that he'd almost got a heart attack when he heard a very soft but frightening noise coming out of the small forest to his right side. At first, he thought he'd only imagined it, but then he heard it again, a little bit louder and more clear, like clear than before. When he heard the noise for the third time, he was certain it was definitely a sound coming from a human, or at least something human-like. He was frightened, but he still stopped and thought about what he should do. The smart option would be to keep running and ignore it, but what if someone needed help? What if it was a kid? Maybe they were injured. After a few seconds had passed, he finally found the courage to go into the woods and search for whatever it was that had made these noises. He didn't happen to carry a flashlight. He went for a run. I'd be very surprised if he carried a flashlight. So the light coming from his phone had to be enough. After a few minutes of searching, he'd almost given up when he suddenly heard the noise again. But this time, it was only a few meters away. He was sure of that. Still hoping that whatever he was going to find wouldn't be human, he slowly moved in the direction it came from. When he passed a few more trees, he saw something lying on the ground, partially covered by some leaves. But as he moved towards it, Simon noticed that the something was rather a someone, wearing clothes that looked like they were from the 19th century. They were torn and dirty, so he couldn't really tell, but it was definitely not something anyone would wear today. The person in front of him wasn't moving, so he carefully converged towards him and kneeled down to get a closer look, exactly as he had imagined it. This was a human, a young man around the age of 18.
At least, to be honest,
it could have been 16.
Yeah. He's 20.
He'd guess. He had slightly curled brown hair, which was wet, and quite pale skin, which was covered in mud, just like his clothes, which were, in fact, very extraordinary. Very slowly, he reached out and softly touched the man's throat to check for a pulse. It didn't seem to be stable, but at least he could feel something. Just when he wanted to remove his hand, the young man opened his eyes, and in the very moment Simon looked into those brown eyes, he knew he was up for some weird stuff. Yet he had no idea what was about to begin. What a story!
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
I'm a time traveller! I love that!
Oh, wow.
I'm like a budget Doctor Who. That's so cool. I love... This is from Hannah. I think
that
really
is
good.
Extraordinary.
I want to see where we go. I want to go on an adventure.
I want to know more. I want to know.
Brilliant.
I want to know.
And your
more.
English is incredible. For someone who's still got 3 years left of school, wow.
If you fancy more practice, then
keep
by all means,
for us.
Keep
we'll
writing.
Definitely read this out every week.
This can be like our bodega.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. All right. So that's that one. We're now going to go in a different vein.
Oh, there's more fan fiction?
Smutty. There's one more.
That wasn't really smutty. I thought that was remarkable. But that was like Orson Welles level smut.
And this one's a little bit shorter. It's two chapters, but each chapter is two paragraphs long, so okay, be fine.
Right, sorry. So I'll put some different music under this. Let me just settle back in my chair.
We need some like smooth jazz.
Okay.
Like imagine a film noir.
Editing kind of Simon, put in the smooth jazz now.
This is from Joshua Baker. It's titled You Asked For It. It was a quiet afternoon on the serene island of Exeter Uni. Students and faculty walked down the many streets, browsing shops and perusing pubs as they went on their respective daily routines. At this time, a slight stoic lad by the name of Dan Moore worked tirelessly in his respectable flat. He was a twig of a youth. Thanks, mate. Balanced only by the humbly omnipotent weight of his forehead. That is a glorious phrase. I love that. I'm getting that on a t-shirt. Which currently glistened with sweat. You see, Dan was a hopeless romantic and hoped to impress his longtime best friend and housemate, the prestigious Simon Clark, with a candlelit dinner prepared by his own hands. The meal, it gets weird, okay? Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
The meal was also meant as a token of love, for Dan had decided that he could wait no longer. From the first time he'd met Simon at chapel choir and absorbed the melodious tones of the physicist's voice like drops of mild honey.
Ooh.
He was instantly struck with an insatiable thirst for him. The only thing standing in his way was the fact that he knew Simon had his eyes on another. Seconds later, the door opened and the door to the house slammed open. And Dan cringed as jars of jam were rattled from their shelves and the lights flickered. This is literally me when you're in one of your moods and you slam something and I'm like, oh, careful of the hummus. And the lights flickered. They did this on occasion, which is a callback to the lights going out, which I like. That's really good. In the open doorway stood Dan's monomy, the world's famous YouTube presence, Simon Clark. Simon was a tall, strapping man with unkempt dark hair and a tanned face resembling Tom Selleck.
Yeah, I'll take that.
I mean, you can take it.
Yeah.
Sure.
I also, from this description, I expect that I'm going to sound like Brian Blessed.
Okay, I'll remember that. Dan was struck by Simon's dishevelled appearance as he stood panting with a fierce glint in his eye. In the next moment, Simon darted across the room and grabbed Dan by both shoulders and almost screamed, "It is done!" Dan flashed a beaming smile at his mate, though he felt a slight twinge of regret on the inside. He had almost hoped it would not come to this. This is chapter 2. As soon as Simon had begun his PhD work, it became apparent that he was nothing short of obsessed with it. He had all but legally married himself to this thesis. Dan had been forced to stand as he watched his lifelong partner fight day after day against a faulty code and setbacks. He'd gone so far as to begin to believe that Simon would never finish his thesis in time, and thereby be able to devote all his attention to his wanting housemate. But as Dan held his video camera and watched as Simon burned the symbolic copy of his finally completed script, he fought to hold back tears. Now that the inversion code was complete, there was nothing standing in Simon's way to obtaining the complete thesis and forgetting Dan in the process. Moore watched as Simon sensually rubbed his body with the ashes of his accomplishment and secretly wished the physicist would caress him in such a loving way. Eventually, he couldn't take it anymore and began to walk back inside, slouched in a defeated pose. He'd almost made it to the door when he felt a warm hand touch his shoulder. He turned around and looked straight into Simon's gleaming eyes. They were damp with the marks of fresh tears. God. Simon said to him, "I couldn't have done this without you. I know you felt abandoned and I have let this paper come between us, but I'll never leave you. Never." We now have two sentences to go. Look at the escalation.
Right, okay.
"But I will never leave you. Never." Dan felt his spirits lift a bit as Simon led him to the inside and closed the door. That evening, they made sweet love on a bed supported by a collection of George R. R. Martin's finest works and set to the dulcet tones of a Yogscast live stream. To be continued.
Oh my, wow.
That escalates quickly.
That went from 0 to 100 really quickly.
It did.
You missed out all the juicy bits.
Equally.
Very good.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that. I mean, to be honest, I think the time traveller has more legs because, I mean, time travel, man.
Oh, good grief. We're putting our fan fiction authors against each other. We have multiple fan fiction authors.
So that was from Joshua Baker, and the other one was from Hannah in Germany.
Hannah and Josh, top lads.
Top lads.
Absolutely top lads. Thank you. I've never had fan fiction written about me.
No, nor have I.
So
it's a bit weird, I'm not going to lie. You can read out the next ones.
All right, I'll read out the next ones.
If there are next ones.
Yeah, we would love. Weird as this is, and hope this podcast is gradually getting longer and longer. We want to keep it at about an hour in length ish. So, Wow, that's might become a regular feature. If you like the fan fictions, then do let us know in an email.
Yeah.
Or if you're watching on YouTube, in a comment.
And we really do appreciate all the correspondence we get. Also, we've noticed that quite a few people have been leaving us reviews on iTunes.
That really helps, Podbean. Guys.
It's
Thank you.
Massive, massive help. So if you can take some time out and leave us a comment, you know, constructive criticism, totally fine.
Yeah, if you don't like something we do, tell us.
Yeah, yeah, let us know, because we're wanting to improve. I mean, I'm certainly really enjoying doing this. So.
Yeah, I really am.
Yeah, but thank you so much. It means so much to see, you know, I check all the emails, and when I open it and I see that we've got, you know, 13 unread letters of correspondence, it's a really nice feeling to know that people enjoy listening to us.
And, yeah, especially after such a short period of time, you guys have got on board and really connected with the podcast. Yeah. And it's basically just like you're in a sitting room with Dan and I.
Yeah.
And I think that's really great that there's 1,000 of you in here. It's rather pokey.
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Sorry, I'm sat on... sorry, mate. Hang on.
So, Simon, what have we learnt today?
Well, Dan, we briefly talked about the Yonalosse salamander, which is a particularly large woodland salamander from the Appalachian Mountains.
I'm not going to lie, I totally forgot we were even talking about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I read the rest of the article whilst we were talking, and it's a pretty bog-standard animal, I'll be honest. I was looking for something really interesting to latch onto.
Just
got
a normal
nothing.
Salamander.
But it lives in the Appalachian Mountains, which has some music named after it.
Mm-hmm.
And from the music, we went on to talk about chapel choir stuff.
Used to be as high as the Rockies in the Alps before natural erosion.
Until they lost their dorsal fins.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Trouserless Truro.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about Christopher Nolan's excellent epic Dunkirk.
Go and see it, go and see it, go and see it.
And then we went to the weirdest correspondence corner we've ever had.
Also the best.
Also the best. It was great.
Ever had. That's all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook. And if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel, Spongy and Electric.
Newt, Henge and Trouser recommendations can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole.
And we'll see you next time.